Fred at School Show. Fred at School Show.
Fred at School here at Fred Film Radio. Welcome back. This is the final chapter of the first year. In fact, we have to talk about a specific film called Io Sono Lì by Andrea Segre. But for the UK releases, it was actually released as Shun Li and the Poet. So there's a lot that we're going to talk about. But first of all, let me introduce once again, and for the last time also for the first year, what Fred at School is about. So we are an educational project that it's presented with Creative Europe program, and we kind of like spanning all over Europe within 8 different countries. And in each single country, we have a lot of students involved, secondary school students involved into the viewing and critiquing, and also the open discussion about 4 films that we shortlisted from the Lux Prize. So the journey was fantastic. I enjoyed thoroughly listening to their insightful and original reviews. But first of all, let's start, as usual, our little episode with the Fred at School's professional review.
Fred at School, Io Sono Lì, Shun Li and the Poet. After being presented at the Venice Days event of the 68th Venice International Film Festival, Io Sono Lì, written and directed by Andrea Segre, was distributed in Italian cinema theatres in September 2011 and thereafter in a number of European countries, including France and Spain. It is the story of a female Chinese immigrant in Italy called Shun Li, who has to work hard in a textile workshop in order to obtain the documents she needs to bring her son to Italy. It won 3 prizes at the Venice Film Festival, including the FEDIC Award, awarded by the Italian Cine Club Federation, for the originality of a story that skillfully weaves fiction and documentary and gives us an effective and convincing portrait of today's reality. Often in the Venice spotlight, starting with presentation of Dio Era un Musicista, God Was a Musician, 2005, dedicated to African culture, Andrea Segre's work has revolved from the outset around the issue of the marginalization of certain peoples and the search for their specific ethnicity, attempting to bring into focus their encounters with different social forms. This was true of his first documentary, Lo Sterminio dei Popoli Zingari, Extermination of the Gypsy Peoples, in 1998, or the later Come un uomo sulla terra, As a Man on Earth, of 2008, centered on the experiences and suffering of migrants en route to Europe. Not forgetting Il Sangue Verde, Green Blood, which reconstructs the events and violent clashes in Rossano in the Reggio Calabria province, where several hundred migrants demonstrated in the streets of the city in January 2010 to protest against discrimination and wretched living conditions, setting vehicles alight and battling with the police. Io Sono Lì marked Segre's first outing as the director of a feature film, in which, however, the filmmaker's documentary sensibilities emerge with great intensity. In particular, through a photographic style that was very careful to exploit the depth and complexity of real settings. This striving to stick to the social reality is apparent in the fact that the bar where the main character Shun Li works actually exists in real life. It is the Osteria Paradiso in Chioggia, in the Venetian Lagoon, a haunt for the fishermen who inspired the most important encounter in the film. This establishment is actually run by Chinese immigrants. As Segre himself emphasizes, the film is based on a true story, a real encounter with a Chinese girl who worked behind the bar of a tavern frequented by Chioggia fishermen. Watching her provided ideas for the story. What sort of relationships would she be able to establish in a region like mine, so unaccustomed to change? From that real encounter, the idea arose to fictionalize the story. Among the director's most recent works, very much in line with his interests and his poetry, the documentary In Debito, Undue Debt, in 2013 should be noted, in which an artistic tour of the Italian musician Vinicio Capossela became the opportunity for a passionate analysis of Greek culture and society in the years of the financial crisis. La Prima Neve, The First Snow, also released in 2013, is the story of a citizen of Togo who emigrates to Italy and goes to live in a mountain valley, where he establishes a strong bond with the local inhabitants. Come il peso dell'acqua, like the weight of water, was produced to mark the anniversary of the 2013 tragedy in Lampedusa, in which 366 migrants were drowned.
And here we are, back for after the short introductory clip for Shun Li and the Poet. But now let's leave the introduction behind and let's get into the thick of the conversation with a very special guest. In fact, here with us today is Guy Lodge. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So, Guy, maybe this question will be a bit demanding because probably from the last time that you've seen Shun Li and the Poet and now you've probably also watched roughly 1,000 films. But can you just tell me briefly what you still kind of cherish about the film and about the screening and what still, you know, back in the day when you actually reviewed it, what really struck your attention?
It's really the images of the film, I think, that stick most, and that sort of struck me most up front. I think the director, Andrea Segre, is a very strong visual storyteller, and he's working with one of the great kind of directors of photography working now, Luca Bigazzi, who has, sure, I think, since made more of a name for himself with Paolo Sorrentino's films. Mm-hmm. But it's the film that just these sort of shimmering opalescent images of kind of Venice in, you know, in the rain, and it's so kind of atmospheric, and I think it so reflects its of Heron's state of mind. So whenever I go to Venice at least once a year for the film festival now, so that film's always kind of foremost in my mind when I go there. I think it's sort of captured that city in a way that probably a few films since Don't Look Now have.
Very true. And do you think the strength of the film lies into the sort of nuances and the subtlety of also, you know, tackling the sort of the main issues of the film, so the concept of immigration and integration or the lack of it? And you think the aesthetics kind of functions for that?
I think so, because I think they kind of reflect a foreign take on Italian society. I think it's, mm-hmm. I think you're seeing it very much through, you know, through the eyes of its lead character, Shun Li, who's so beautifully played by Zhao Tao. And I think the images kind of construct Venice and Italy as this slightly mystic and unfamiliar place.
Yeah, in fact, the students, this was by far the favorite out of the four films that we screened. And they really got engaged into the characters, although, you know, like the kind of target audience that we have here at Freddie School is roughly composed by 14-year-old kids. Do you think the power of the two main characters lies also in the sort of universal kind of feelings that they convey? So the fact of like not being part of something, but at the same time being part of the universal kind of way of wanting to be, you know, accepted.
I think very much so, and I'm interested to hear that sort of such young viewers responded so well to the film, because it's quite a, you know, it's quite a mature love story. But I think everyone can relate to the feeling of being, you know, an outsider in a kind of unfamiliar place, and Shun Li herself is quite an innocent as a character. So I'm not surprised to sort of hear that a fairly broad range of viewers would respond to that and kind of identify with her experience, because even as viewers, we're kind of very much in her realm. We're also kind of in this fairly unfamiliar surrounding. And I think she is a kind of great symbolic character, particularly now in kind of a Europe that's where, you know, immigration is increasingly a hot topic of conversation. There are a lot of heated feelings about it. I think the kind of purity of her perspective can be quite, you know, unifying for viewers and kind of in understanding that, you know, the other side of that perspective.
Very true. And also, you know, going back to the idea of like the subtlety of tackling the sort of the main issues that we have here in Shun Li and the Poet. We also screened, I don't know if you've seen it, but we also screened three other films. And one of them, for example, the first one was Illegal by Olivier Depass, which is a very, you know, it kind of tackles the same main topics of illegal immigration or immigration per se, but in a very violent way. Whereas here it's just always, you know, borderline. And the students, in fact, they got much more engaged with Shun Li and the Poet. You think the key, especially for a younger and sort of like unacquainted audiences with, you know, independent European cinema, is always being very gentle with the approach of this, you know, such delicate issues. Or sometimes it's also like a sort of in-your-face approach can bear fruit.
I think it depends on, you know, on the execution of that approach. I think there's room for both, and I think both can be, you know, can be very compelling. I think in the case of Shun Li, I think it's because there's such empathy to Segre's approach, and characters kind of foregrounded ahead of rhetoric or narrative. So I think it's hard not to empathize with those characters and to kind of feel their struggle. So I think that's what draws us in, rather than a kind of really in-your-face technique.
And you think you also managed to watch it again when I contacted you for the interview, or you know, if you didn't, can you just tell me maybe one particular scene that is still in your kind of in your critic's heart?
It's actually, again, I sort of talk about images, but it is that opening image of the kind of candles floating across the water, which I think is it's kind of a beautiful image in itself, but I think it then comes to encapsulate the whole film at a kind of visually symbolic level. I think she is that sort of, you know, that bright flame kind of floating in this kind of dark nowhere and finding herself. It's a very sort of pure and quite sort of simple metaphor, but I still find it very effective and very touching.
Very true. Well, thank you so much, Guy. Thank you for introducing the film with us. And I hope to contact you again for another film, maybe for next year. And now we're going to just stop by for a little short break. But stay tuned on Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred at School Show.
Fred at School for Fred Film Radio. And finally, this is the last episode, the last film of four, Io Sono Lì, or actually for the English speaking countries that got released, was Shun Li and the Poet. We need to get straight into the discussion, of course, and because I'm just joined by, as usual, thankfully, by Nicholas Walker. Welcome.
Hello.
So, Nick, before actually we get straight into our little chat and kind of analysis of how the students and overall the project for the first year came about, I'd like to listen to their final review of Shun Li and the Poet, and then we're going to get back here in the studio.
Sounds good.
Oh, it was really emotional, and it included like a lot of stereotypes of Italy and like some of the characters, and it just had a really moving storyline.
I think the storyline for this film was more intriguing than the one for Plato's Academy. The way they put across the idea of having to pay for your kid to see them again.
It's because they spent the whole film trying to they were building this relationship between the two, and then at the end they don't end up together, and it kind of made you sad.
There you go. It's kind of make you sad. We can actually break, probably, you know, we can destroy one of the myths about independent European cinema, because finally, out of four screenings, we can say that European independent cinemas can also be a crowd pleaser, and pretty much everybody liked it.
Yes, it's such a relief that to hear the students really like one of the films. It's so nice. This film's such a universal film. It's such a study of friendship, apart from anything else. It's irrelevant, really, whether people are from or that they are different genders or that they're different ages. It's such a thing that I think they can all relate to. And the fact that it's set in such a small community meant that certain of the characters could be kind of identified with quite quickly, I think, which I think obviously shows in their remarks. They sort of felt like they... they knew them, and it was a sort of challenging about Italian stereotypes, and that they felt quite emotionally connected. So that was really lovely. I enjoyed hearing them say that.
Exactly. The fact probably with this film, we have probably for the first time, a very subtle approach to a lot of themes and issues, rather than being, you know, like being splattered on their faces and be like either in a slapstick way or in an ironic way, for example, like Plato's Academy, or in Illegal, which was actually violently involving. In this film, we get to kind of appreciate, but also absorb the themes of immigration and integration, or the lack thereof, in a very subtle way. And as you said, you have also the constant kind of poetic binding of the storyline. And yeah. I thought that probably, you know, that it's kind of, I really appreciated the fact that that was the last film to be shown, because it was sort of a crash course for the kids to kind of understand the different ways of critical viewing, but to then kind of like, you know, finally summarize it into this screening of Yosuno Lee, or Shun Lee and the Poet.
Yeah, no, I quite agree with that. I'm glad that the order was kept like this, because this film, whether one should have a favorite or not, I'm not sure, but this was my favorite personally, and I mm-hmm. think the students really reacted well to it. It was just a joy, actually. I think the way that they could relate and associate the personal relationships, and then they were obviously empathizing with them. How do you get connected to a film emotionally? I mean, you have to relate to the characters. So there's a woman divorced, you know, she's looking for a son, and then there's a fisherman who's a poet as well, and obviously these aren't going to be the experiences that these young people have, so they're quite alien in one way. And yet, because of the way they connected with each other, both facing bigotry, you know, he's a mm-hmm. Yugoslavian emigre and she's Chinese, and there's obviously a little more than a little xenophobia going on towards the Chinese in that Venetian community. I think you're right, it wasn't quite as aggressive or slapstick, or as caricatured as the other two films. It felt a more mature piece mm-hmm. of filmmaking. And I think certainly the kids, how they said that they... you know, they were celebrating some of the things in the film. It meant more. It was a sort of strong sense of the personal about this. I think they related to Beppe particularly, which is interesting, yeah. given that he's much the older man in it as well. So I think that was really nice. You know, they really seemed to warm to the characters the way that they were portrayed. But also, as you say, the fact that this was the last film is inevitably going to give the students a really, you know, will end on a high note, really.
Mm-hmm. And do you think precisely regarding the sort of order, the first year in Freda's school decided the viewing. So we started from Illegal, then Plato's Academy, and then we finish on Shun Lee and the Poet. Do you think that kind of shifting it around, so for example, let's put Shun Lee and the Poet as the first film to be screened, would have also implied, or anyway, kind of influenced the students to a different approach of critical viewing and a kind of a critical eye of it? So you think that probably even the order per se, since of course it's like everything is crammed in just three screenings, also kind of influences the way that now they are approaching independent European cinema?
Yeah, it's hard to say, obviously, whether you'd have swapped the order around, exactly how they'd have viewed all the films, because I think the first film was always going to be a little bit strange because they weren't used to subtitles at all. There was mm-hmm. there was very little frame of reference, so that film was always going to be partly not just about the film, but their reaction to the experience of watching a foreign language film, which was largely very positive. I remember at the end of the first film, they were thinking really, or the hope was that the second film was going to be a comedy. It was going to be not quite so dark. Yeah. And when it was dark, I think they were a little bit disappointed because they're thinking, well, maybe all of these films are just going to be a little bit depressing and sad. And even though the subject matters are fascinating, and we obviously have over this period got that from the students, they really love the process of watching and the issues in the film, whether they're about multiculturalism or identity, community mm-hmm. obviously is a big thing in these films. It's fascinating. So I think the process and the actual subject matter they have found really, really a joy. What's been disappointing, I think, for them is that they are used to watching slightly lighter tone films.
Yeah.
And so this film, whilst it's, again, it's not a light film in any sense, it is quite a maturely done movie. And so by this time, they'd got used to the fact that they weren't going to see people falling over or being silly, or you know, it wasn't going to be a comedy. So that, I think they'd got used to that process. So that, I think the order's been quite right. They've got used to the subtitles, and they've seen a much darker film. So by that time, they're used to the subtitles, and they've got into the subject matter. So by the time they've got to Shun-Li, I think that those things aren't really the issues for them. Clearly, they've mentioned that they're watching films with subtitles with ease now. It's easy for them. They're confident with it, and in some cases, actually going on to watch films themselves in their own time now. So I think it's created that space for them. So this film is right to do it last, because I think that as friendship blossoms in this film, they can just ignore the fact that it's subtitled. They don't care about that. They don't care that it's a dark or serious tone to the film, because they're used to that as well. Now they can just really enjoy the blossoming of that friendship and the sort of subtleties and the nuances. So they're certainly more open-minded to it. So I think Fred has got it just about right, I would say. Yeah. And I think that the teachers have echoed that as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad actually that you mentioned that, the fact that, you know, it was pretty remarkable that it took only roughly three films, subtitled films, to make him acquainted with subtitles. And right now I heard also, I think Billy was the one that said that he watched a Polish film in his spare time and he didn't even notice anymore the subtitles. So that's already a wonderful kind of, you know, for Fred at school, that's pretty good. And, but just to kind of sum up, I'm really intrigued also in your approach and also your experience all throughout the first year here at Fred at school. What you think you gathered and what you kind of learned from this sort of direct learning with this new sort of target audience, that we can call it, you know, the beginning of secondary school students. Did you kind of gather up any thoughts about it, like starting probably from the beginning up to now?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think the first there's three things really. The first one is the experience of watching films that they're not used to, you know, the kind of film. So they're dark dramas, essentially, and that they're foreign language, so the subtitle. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it's given them a confidence to actually start exploring other films of a similar nature, or things that are perhaps before this project that would have been very much outside of their comfort zone, actually. And then the third thing, I think it's certainly opened their mind to the ways of expressing what they feel about the films. Mm. So doing that on radio is for some people can be a conflicting thing. It makes people slightly nervous, or because whilst they are comfortable in what they're saying it to a potentially large audience. So there's a nerve aspect coming to it. They're not confident necessarily with that before they start. So taking the three things in tune, I think the first thing is they've got used to seeing films which are not just, with all respect to the students' tastes, Hollywood blockbusters, which have got a slightly easier narrative and there's nothing too challenging about them. The second one is that they have gone, and all credit to them, all credit to the teachers, and of course to Fred for doing it, is they've gone on to watch other films. They've explored things. You know, they've become, as one of the students said, we've become slightly more cultured. We're looking at other places with other views. I mean, that's incredible within the four-film time frame. And the last one is, I noticed very much in the first recording that some of the students took two or three goes to get it right. They were nervous, they were giggling, they didn't really know what to say because they thought they had to say something. Mm-hmm. And we said to them from the off, you know, just be yourself, just say exactly what you think, listen to other people's views and then put that in a context and then see what you think. And now they seem to be flying with it, really amazing. They're looking at, their perspective is now very different on cinema generally, and particularly within that sort of niche, if you like, for them, of foreign language cinema. They're very confident speakers about it, which was actually very moving to hear, because initially they were anything but that. And of course they're saying what comes into their minds. They're actually very, it's a sort of free flowing consciousness. But given also a little bit of time between the watching and the critique of the film, they're able to really contextualize it and make them think a lot more about what they're seeing and what they're experiencing.
Yeah, I'm so glad they actually used that word, moving, because it was. It was also for me to listen to the, you know, sort of the journey starting from Illegal, because as the first, yeah, let's call it like that, I kind of felt them very detached at the beginning. They were sort of like judging the film because they couldn't find anything to grasp on or to kind of like feel involved in. And then, you know, little by little, even if they didn't like films, they still had a critical and rational approach. And then everything culminated with Sean Lee and the Poet, where they actually liked it, but it wasn't just saying, I liked it, it's good, and that's it. There was still the critical thinking coming about, and you could hear the same depth of analysis that you had even when they didn't like the film at all, such as Beethoven's Academy, but also kind of justifying why they liked it so much and which character they really felt attached with. And I thought that it was, you know, that was kind of groundbreaking for such young kids to have such a deep understanding and such a rational as well as emotional understanding of the film.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly, you know, as you say, Legal, they were looking at it, and I think they described it as interesting emotionally. Yeah. That's different from being emotionally engaged. I just found it interesting, which is not to say that's a bad way of looking at it, because the film is quite rather an unresolved, conclusion to the film. So that, no closure. So that felt to them very unfinished for a start off. The second experience of Plato's Academy then moved on to the fact that the teachers loved it, and they didn't, and they were examining why that would be, and yet you're right, even though they didn't like it as an experience, they got a lot from it. They were looking at this multicultural communities, which were quite separate but actually connected in various ways, and how that played out together and the representations of that and the country. But by that time, they, you know, by this film, by Shun Li, they'd moved from being quite distanced to very, very connected. They really related to the film. And they were asked, I think, you know, which character did you relate to? But also why? They felt sad for him. They were moved due to the violence and due to his displacement. And so they really connected with it. And I think that's the biggest thing, in a way, that they were viewing the films in the same way. They were watching them in a classroom. They were recording. The process is the same. It's the emotional connection that they changed over just four films, which is, and over a short period of time. So that's, I think it's quite an amazing journey for them. And I know that the teachers have felt this has just been a fascinating project. And I know they're looking forward to doing it again, absolutely, as are the students. And I think for them, it's going to, I hope what it does, actually, apart from anything else, is set them off on this lifelong journey of exploring cinema from every possible culture. Sure. Because that's, I think, if it's one thing, that's what this Fred at School project has done, is it's about being a catalyst for making people more confident in cinema watching.
Indeed. And also, I'm looking forward to listening to their reviews for the next spring, the next films, the next upcoming projects. But then we can also stop by for a second for a little short break, and then we're going to continue our conversation with a special guest.
Fred at School Show.
Fredfin Radio, here always for Fred at School. We're back for our UK show, and here with me again is Nick Walker. And I know, Nick, that you also have a very special guest with you.
Absolutely. Nice to be back. I wanted to talk a little bit about the experiences of working with young people, schools, particularly with European cinema, and I suppose in general, education and audience development. And I thought in regards to that importance, the best person that I could think of who's got so much experience is my colleague here who's with us today, Trish Scheel from the Cambridge Film Consortium. So Trish, and knowing that your experience of working with young people and schools and obviously always including European cinema, what do you think of the importance of introducing young people to European films at quite an early age?
Oh, I think it's really important to introduce young people at a very early age, because that's when they've got the wonder of learning. And it also normalizes that experience of a European film. Whereas if you wait till they're older, it'll seem sort of stranger to them and they're maybe more resistant to it. So I think capturing a very young audience is crucial.
Yeah. Do you tend to do that in the cinema often? You know, so they're watching feature films, or are there different ways of doing that for you?
Well, for us, we've tended to use things like National Schools Film Week, as was and is now the Interfilm Festival, or working with, in the past, we've worked with people like organizations like Alliance Française, where they already have links with schools and bring in young people who want to, say, look at French cinema. But we also work with primary schools in terms of, like, even their normal sort of curriculum, and then where you see opportunities to show cultural cinema, you know, films beyond the Hollywood product, you make the most of that. So, like, for when we did Book Week, National Book Week, or World Book Day, it's called, when we did that, we were showing Eleanor's Secret, which is a lovely little film about spelling and, you know, not being able to spell. Little French film, but an animation. So, you know, there are really good ways of doing it.
Mm. So to get that kind of, and I think it's sometimes the teachers, actually, not just the students, who have this almost a fear of subtitles.
Yeah.
How do you get over that? What's the process to do that?
Well, I think one of the best things is to think about literacy. Think of it in terms of literacy. A, for becoming more literate in a modern language, and B, more literate in your own, you know, native tongue. So one way that I've seen has been done, we haven't done it so much here, but I have seen it done, is where they've made little films and they've had to translate them, or they write their own intertitles for it. Now, I think once you engage that and it becomes part of a fun learning experience, I think that's a really good way of getting young children to sort of not be so afraid of it. I think the other thing about subtitling is, just in, as a general thing, is that when we showed Spirited Away, we did, which is a Japanese animation, we showed for the children with learning difficulties, we showed the dubbed version so that they wouldn't feel behind with the reading, and then at the same time in another screen we showed the subtitled version, and we found that because the teachers selected who went into the, you know, the group that was dubbed. And actually, most of them selected subtitled films, you know, so they actually went into the subtitled version. And you got much more of the rhythm of the language. And I think it's really important that young people not only see the story and, you know, experience the story, but they actually hear the rhythm of different languages. It's really important for that sort of cultural diversity, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good thing, because I obviously know I've shown films to young people for many years, European cinema, and I think this project, the Fred at School project, just is quite careful in that the films that they're selecting are not easy watches. So the young people are engaging with the process of getting to understand cinema, but right from the off, they're watching films which actually have young protagonists in them. So actually carefully selecting the kind of films you're watching is really, really important. I'm sure you'll agree.
Oh, I do. I think because you don't want to put them off, you know, that's the point. It's about that, well, they're at that age and they're open to all sorts of experiences. It is important. I'm not sure about genre, but I would certainly say that being selective about the type of films that you choose for young children. So, for example, when you put the Cine School European Cinema on screen, when that was set up, there was a film there called The White Mane. And we also had The Red Balloon. And both of those films, we brought in, it was young children from primary schools, and they really took to them. They really, and they loved the one of the White Mane as much as they did the one of the Red Balloon. So what I'm saying is those children were exposed to that, but it was the right tone for that age group. And I think things like, you know, as I say, Eleanor's Secret or Belleville Rendezvous, you know, these sort of films that there are some that are challenging, some that are more sort of, I suppose, accessible.
I think, I mean, the two films you just mentioned, The Red Balloon and White Mane by Albert Lamorassi, there's not a lot of dialogue in them. And I think one of the things about these films for the Fred at School project is that they're not too word heavy, but they are certainly subtitled. And what we found is that the students, after the first film, because they've watched four films in this process, after the first film, they were commenting that they felt that was a little bit tricky for them, because they'd rarely seen, or if ever, actually seen a subtitled film. By the second film, that was not so much of a problem. By the fourth film, they all said universally that it wasn't even an issue. They didn't care less, actually. So the subtitles was not an issue. However, the thing about and perhaps not the genre, but the type. The type of films they're watching, as you say, the Lux Prize are the films that these students are watching as part of this project, and so they're all looking at quite important issues. They're looking at identity and immigration and asylum, community. And I think European cinema, well, any cinema really worth its salt, can be a starting point for discussing issues as well as just being able to get over the subtitles thing. Is that something you've done a lot of yourself?
Well, it was funny. I was thinking as you were saying that about a really interesting set of films that we've used in the past. And they were... Bertrand Tavernier's production company, Little Bear, did a series of films where they pitched to young people in France to come up with an idea about racism, and then they actually got professionals to make the film, and they were very short films, and the Everyday Racism was the English title of the collection of films, and each one had this really short, you know, 5 to 10, 5 minutes probably most of them, little film about almost insidious racism. And it had come through the children, and some really interesting examples of it. And we ran an event here, and the discussion afterwards was like fantastic, because using film, it sort of put them in their experience on their own terms, because young people had actually, you know, come up with the idea. So they were often protagonists in the film with young people. But it was lovely to see it. And I thought, yeah, it's really important, because also if you're going to look at issues like racism, or if you're going to look at like sort of cultural deprivation, like in Lion is another good one that shows this, or you've got political things to think about with like Butterfly's Tongue, you know, for the sort of the Spanish Civil War. So I think it's marvellous really what cinema can do to sort of open up the dialogues with a lot of background and experience that they can identify with.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, these students that have been recording these radio interviews, they've come away and they've basically said that now they're way more confident with the subtitles. You know, it's not an issue. And actually, they're starting to watch films in their own time, which is such a great thing. I mean, I felt very proud of the students, actually. They were really engaged in the process. And they were saying, well, they felt really pleased with themselves. They were quite, not cocky, but they were very enthusiastic. And they'd become, in their own words, much more cultured and more open-minded as a result of watching these films. So they're actually, in their own private time, were becoming consumers, if you like, of European cinema, which is great.
I think what is also really important is opening doors for them, and I think that's where we all share, you know, our values really are shared, that what we're really doing is, are you still there? Oh, sorry, yeah. I lost you, sorry. What we're really doing there is opening new doors for them to find new ways of learning and experiencing the world, and I think it's so important that, you know, cinema can do that, that cinema's able to sort of capture their imagination, and I think that confidence is really important, because once you've given them the confidence, you're going to send them on their way, and then you've opened a new world for them, haven't you?
Well, that's a good phrase. They're looking at people or other people's worlds, and they can, if you like, there's be a sort of mirror image of their own worlds, so they can make something going on there. What was that?
It's all right.
Yeah, we can start from here. Don't worry.
Okay, I'm going to start again. Yeah, I think that's very important, because actually some of the students are sort of saying that they're seeing other people's worlds, issues and sort of scenarios they'd not really thought of too much before. So that sort of different perspective on other people's cultures is, in a nice way, it's a kind of nice mirror into their own world as well.
Yes, because I think they identify with a lot of it, you know, and I think it's, I mean, one of the things about European cinema is you have a much more diverse aesthetic style. So really, compared to, say, the Hollywood product, I mean, there is, you know, obviously about variety and fantastic Hollywood cinema, but as that is mostly what they're exposed to, I think by offering them a different palette of films, you know, with different rhythms of language and a different aesthetic style to it, what you find is that they are very inspired by that. And I think that's, you know, is wonderful to see that, and that sense of what they can identify with, because otherwise all their models, their cultural models, are going to be American, aren't they, or US based. So this is like lovely to have them thinking about, you know, maybe someone in Portugal and then somebody else in Eastern Europe or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's true. In fact, one of the things that one of the students said after the first film we watched, which was called Illegal, which is a co-production from Belgium and France and Luxembourg, and the film has got quite an unresolved ending. Certainly not a happy ending. In fact, it's not really much of a conclusion of what that ending is. So they were talking in the classroom about the Todorov structure, the equilibrium, disruption, resolution, you know, the classic narrative arc. And they'd studied that, but they were so unused to seeing no ending. And they were saying, well, what happens now? What's meant to be going on? And so that was kind of confusing. Mm-hmm. By the last film, they were saying, oh, yeah, well, that doesn't happen in every film. And it was almost telling us that that was how it was. And I think, you know, it's, as you say, it's not just about the kind of characters that they see or the kind of representations, but it's the structure as well of the films in European cinema with its... It's such a rich and, you know, there's lots of variety going on. The experience of knowing the process and the knowledge of understanding film through European film, I think can be a real eye-opener for them as well.
And I think just even sound quality, you know, when you listen to a Hollywood film and you listen to sort of a European film, there's a very different aesthetic sound quality to them, which makes them, I think, very interesting because of that. It's less noisy in terms of special effects and big budget special effects. So they're listening in a very different way, which I think is important. So characters get a chance to be much more experienced, I think.
Well, segueing into the idea of listening, that part of the process of the Fred at School project is for the young people to take some time, like maybe a day or so, and then with their peers and with the teachers to record their thoughts onto a digital recording device, so that this goes up obviously onto Fred at School and the radio programs. How beneficial do you think it is to get young people to be actually commenting, to be part of that dialogue, so that they can actually express themselves and have the confidence to talk about what they think and consider both, you know, European cinema generally and the issues within the films?
Well, I think it would make them more confident about their opinions. I think if they share their opinions with other people, you know, once you start explaining what you're doing to other people, you become more articulate about it. But also it sort of becomes, you know, you're going to be more confident about your opinion on it. And I think the other thing is that it's good for evaluation. You know, when you want to look at the impact of a project, it's really useful to see the genuine experiences of the young people rather than, you know, a bit of tick box. So I think if they're writing and experience, you know, writing about their own personal reflections, I think that'd be fantastic. The other way I would want to attract maybe a teenage audience would be through, you know, set themes in their curriculum. So we did a Swedish film, Let the Right One In, which we knew they'd love because it was like, you know, a vampire story, but we did it through an A-level syllabus called Emotional Experiences on Film and Popular and Emotional Experiences. And so that one, when you want to target a group, you can also go directly to the curriculum and work, find a theme in the curriculum and then bring the films into suit there. So that's another way I think I would be thinking about how to attract young people for subtitled films.
That's absolutely right, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, well, thanks, Trish. Right. Thank you very much.
It's nice to talk to you.
All right, I'll see you Thursday.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, bye, Nico. Bye.
Bye,
okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was incredibly interesting, Nick. Thanks very much for bringing Trish here. I really enjoyed also kind of sitting back and relaxing and listening to you. So thank you again.
My pleasure.
And, well, it's kind of a shame as well because, you know, I was really getting used to having this sort of third slot just to be a part of the audience. But, you know, now we're coming to an end for the last episode. But, you know, we're going to be back much stronger next year.
I think so. I think that the strength of this first... And it wasn't an experiment, it was a first project. It's really given people an opportunity to delve into the thought process of both the teachers and the students. And I think all the people we've had on the show so far have really been telling us that this is a long-term project. They've been doing projects and working with young people around European cinema for many, many years. This is something that's been established. However, the Fred at School thing, as everybody has agreed, it's been a really enlightening project, but because it's given people absolutely a real interest in experiencing that process. It's a great knowledge to be able to think about a project and think about a film and then have their own ideas recorded, and it's so beneficial. It's given people a lot of confidence, and I think that's been a really great thing, and I'd like to thank all the people that so far have been involved with that, because I can see how more open-minded, more cultured, more kind of aware these young people are, and that's a terrific thing.
Well, let me thank you for being part of this project, of course, Nick. That was fantastic to have you with us. And well, but you know, we're not finished yet, so just
it's not the end.
Exactly. So also, let's have a little break, and then we're going to be right back for the last part of the show.
Fred at School Show.
Fred Film Radio here, always for Fred at School. And well, yes, we arrived to the very end, the final chapter of this show, for the UK show, but still, you don't need to listen to just my voice. In fact, I have a very special guest with me, and this guest is Pilar Orero. Welcome.
Oh, hello.
So, Pilar, I invited you here because Fred at School is always incredibly keen to shed a light on accessibility. And I know that you're an expert as well in audiovisual translation. Can you just outline your work for our audience?
What I do, or what we do in my research team at the University in Barcelona, is we try to understand what is accessibility. Because it's not clear or it's not well defined yet. For example, we now take also into consideration accessibility as the lack of understanding a language, since it gives you or it puts you in the same situation as a deaf person who cannot understand or say anything. We're also trying to understand more accessibility ways like clean audio or things like that. So on the one hand, we're trying to define the different accessibility opportunities or features, and then we're trying to find the best way to deliver them so the end user can enjoy them at best. So, for example, the long delay in real-time subtitling with subtitling, and or the quality of the mix audio for audio description, that sort of thing is what we try to understand and make it better if we can.
And what do you think it must be done that it actually it still hasn't been done? Especially, I know that you're a representative for the United Nations. If there's something that it should be pushed in the agenda in terms of accessibility, that you really still, you know, you're actually raising your voice for it.
Well, funnily enough, on Friday last week, it was the World Forum on what is the next step in the UN. Till 2020, in all respects, there are 17 different matters like water or agriculture, or and accessibility wasn't one of them. So what I did on Friday was to say that accessibility should be one of these 17 goals that the UN is going to have in the agenda until 2020. So, yes, I do work for the UN, but UN does not have accessibility as one of the most important goals. I hope they accept it, but we won't know until next week.
Well, we hope so too. As well, you know, probably you may know, but Fred at School is also partnered with Creative Europe. So if, you know, maybe talking about the United Nations is still a bit too broad, we're really concerned about the European panorama right now according to accessibility. You think that the concept of actually unifying, let's say, so the network, the pan-European network, can also bring strength to in terms of accessibility, or maybe is more rather a sort of a concentration on national associations to then form a network from a peripheral perspective to then going into a unified and central one, or maybe the other way around, so from the European Union out there?
You have to do it in every possible way, because one of the biggest outcomes from any project that I've been in is that raising awareness is issue number one. So you have to raise awareness in the UN, as I did on Friday. You have to raise awareness in the European level, in the EU, in the new accessibility directive. And you have to raise awareness in each country that belongs to the European Union. So it could be sort of top down, UN, Europe, and then each European country, and then bottom up from users, user associations, universities. FRED, for example, is the best that I know of, is the best project that is being or is going on for that, and also because it works with young people, and that young people is the future. So to have raising awareness on accessibility with young people across Europe in a pan-European way, to me, is the best, perhaps the best action, the most efficient, if not the best, the most efficient action. And I really think it's very important, very, very important.
Well, I thank you so much for the compliments, first of all. And, well, you know, in our little humble effort, we're still trying, and we're always going to be trying with this project to exactly push those issues and shed a light on them. And hopefully, we're still going to be partnering together, Pilar. And and maybe next time when I'm going to be calling you, it's going to be with brighter news and much better news regarding accessibility. Well, at least fingers crossed.
I hope so. That would be great.
Okay. Thank you so much, Pilar, for being with us.
You're welcome. Bye.
And this is it. This is it. After thanking Pilar, now it's time to, well, not say goodbye, because it's not a goodbye. It's definitely more a see you later or see you next year, because this is the very end of the final chapter for the UK show here at Fred at School. And so it is time also, of course, to pay tribute and thank all our partners that made this project possible, starting from, of course, Fred Film Radio, and then moving to all the universities involved in the project, such as University of Barcelona, Roehampton and Babesh-Bolyai in Spain, Great Britain and Romania, and then, of course, Ajace Torino, always in Italy, Les Amis du Cinéma du Réel in France, and Tofralampin, Icelandic Friends, Festival de Cannes in Spain, HRT Croatia, Subti Limited in Great Britain again, My Movies and Venice Days from Italy, and Claudia Tomasini hailing from Germany, and Subti Access from Italy. And let's never forget our beloved sponsors, Regione Autonoma della Sardegna and Sardegna Film Commission. And, well, I'll greet you once again. This is Niccolò Comotti here for Fred at School at Fred Film Radio.